man, here we go again. Up early, feed the dog, out the door, traffic, at the office, boss in some kind of mood today, no time for lunch, annoying coworker, no time to relax, bedtime. Then we gotta do it all again? No way. Because the best way to break up the mundane every day is to play at Wild Rose Casino and Resort. Slots, tables, sports, and a whole lot of perks when you join and play with your club wild card. So, let's play Wild Rose Casino and Resort, Clinton.
Hi, I'm Jim Street, owner of Streets Maintenance. As a licensed, insured, and bonded master plumber, I specialize in all plumbing repairs, including but not limited to water heater and sump pumps to toilet and faucet repairs and replacements. For more information about my business, I'm online at streetsmaintenance.com and Facebook, or give me a call at 400-4483.
400-4483. Hello there, and welcome to the Hawkeye Hotspot Podcast. It is Thursday, March the 7th, about 9:15 a.m., this is on the Hawk Fanatic feed, so please subscribe to that, like, do all that good stuff for us. Well, it's probably funny for people watching me stumble around trying to get this thing connected on YouTube before we actually go live with the podcast, but that's kind of how we roll here. I am Rob Howe. That is Scott Docterman from The Athletic. If you are watching us on YouTube, we've got a lot of things to talk about. Hawkeyes today, the Hawkeye women begin postseason play tomorrow night in Minneapolis. The Iowa men, senior day on Sunday against Illinois. Wrestling has the Big Ten tournament this weekend. Iowa football got a commitment yesterday, and we'll hit on a couple of closing notes from the combine with Scott later on. And Iowa baseball continues its tough stretch through the non-conference, kind of a up and down non-conference so far for the Iowa baseball team, which came in with high expectations. So a lot on the plate today. How's it feel to be home, Scott?
It feels awesome. You know, I think yesterday I was telling my wife that this was like the first night where I had like, or for, you know, in like 2 weeks where I'd been home and I really didn't have anything to do, you know, it was glorious. It was like, yes, you know, because I had like TV shows, we had games, we had other stuff. And it was like, wow, this is the life. This is what being an old dude's all about, right?
Yeah. You don't move as fast, but you got to keep moving is what, yeah. what I say. You get there when you get there.
Yeah. But I enjoy the quality lying around time too.
Yeah, no doubt. And a lot going on this weekend for everybody. And let's start with what we saw Sunday. It was senior day for the Iowa women's basketball team against then second-ranked Ohio State. The Iowa women get the victory. Caitlin Clark passes Pete Maravich for the NCAA Division I all-time scoring lead. Men or women. The stars were out. The coolest for me, I think, was Maya Moore and Lynette Woodard because of the history of the game and how that kind of folded into what Caitlin was doing. I mean, it's cool to have Nolan Ryan there and Travis Scott, who I don't really know that well. My kids know who he is and think he's cool, so I guess he probably is cool. But again, referring back to us being old dudes, Travis Scott is not on our playlists with Led Zeppelin.
You know, we're old school, even hip hop. You know, I mean, NWA is on mine, but no Travis Scott.
But I know you monitor volume in Carver, and why don't you tell the folks kind of what the volume was like in Carver?
It was a fever pitch throughout. I mean, it was really loud, persistently loud from the opening lineups being unveiled all the way through to the end of the game. And it started to spike around 1:16 when Gabby Marshall hit the 3-pointer and got fouled. That's when the first spike, and it hit that number like five times. There was a couple of other like 114, 115s. That's something you don't see with regularity in Carver. You'll see an outburst, but usually when it's good, it's around 100 decibels. So I was blown away by how loud it got at times. And it was like people were cheering the whole time. This is what everybody wants to see out of the men's program and has complained about for 20 some plus years. But But that said, what an atmosphere, Rob. And it wasn't just the stars that were out. I mean, you had College Game Day there. You had fans got there way early because of game day. They knew that they were seeing something special, and they were wanting to salute. Not, you know, Caitlin Clark is the headliner. There's no question about that. But the entire class is as impactful as any class that Iowa's ever had in any sport. When you go around the arena, Rob, you know this, that Caitlin Clark's got the most jerseys, the most T-shirts, no question. But there are, you know, a sizable amount of grit like Gabby and the glue for Money Martin and, you know, just, you know, sharing It's All Good, Man. And, you know, and then Molly Davis, of course, who was injured. And, you know, so, I mean, when you see all of that, you know how important it is and how what kind of a send-off that they're going to get. In some ways, it was more of a celebration than an actual, like, senior day, because they do get a play at home for the NCAA tournament. But still, it was quite the scene, and it was persistent for a long time.
Yeah, and it was a good game. It was. It was Iowa, as we've talked about numerous times this season on this podcast, Iowa finds a way to kind of eventually – wear the other team down and gain an advantage and get and you know, enjoy a comfortable lead as the second half goes on. And that was the case here. Ohio State impressed me, Scott.
Yeah.
That's a good team. And I get it, while they're kind of up there, and it seems like Ohio State or Iowa, whichever one wins the Big Ten tournament, is locked for the number one seed. But the other one has a shot too, depending on what happens, you know, elsewhere in the country. But I think both teams are worthy of a number one seed.
You're right. I agree. I think Ohio State's terrific. I mean, when you look at their starting lineup and what they're able to do and how versatile they are, and J.C. Shelton is just a tremendous player in the backcourts. Les Taylor is as well. Cody McMahon wasn't real great in this one like she was in the first game, but she's still very capable. And then of course, I blow the last name, but Rebecca, we'll call her, was, I mean, you know, she only had 14 points, but it felt like 28, because she was just drilling threes and she was open. And to be that big and that versatile is like, well, this is like Dirk Nowitzki out here, you know, pick and pop. And this is a tough team to play. So Iowa really had to bring it and be, you know, and they did for a while, and they kept having to weather a lot of runs against them. But they've had two terrific games against one another. They could have two more. Wouldn't shock me if that's the case, you know, that they play on. In fact, I would, if I was to bet on Sunday, I think they do play, especially with Indiana having some injury issues. And then, you know, you could see these teams playing in the Final Four in Cleveland too. So really good game, some great efforts all around for Iowa, for Ohio State, and kind of women's basketball at its best. And of course, it's the highest rated women's basketball game in regular season women's basketball game in 25 years. And that speaks to the surroundings, the competitors, the teams, and just the popularity of the sport.
Yeah. And as Scott mentioned, Indiana, which you would consider the other likely contender this weekend up in Minneapolis, is has some injury issues, not the least of which is Mackenzie Holmes, their star center, and then Lily Meester also dinged up with an ankle injury as well. So we'll see what their availability is like this weekend. It's kind of like with Molly Davis, and just to update folks on her condition, if you haven't heard, she's working her way back. They hope that she can get back this season. It doesn't sound, at least from what Lisa said, that this weekend is likely, but hopefully the NCAA tournament, which you get, you know, whatever, it's weeks out now, just because of the timing of this thing. So hopefully she can get back. But it's like when you're locked into the NCAA tournament, like Iowa, Indiana, Ohio State, and you have an injured player, do you push it to improve your seed this weekend, or do you take the cautious approach, knowing that the big prize happens later this month?
If I'm Indiana, I shut it down. I don't think there's any reason to do this. Now, they're kind of on that 3-4 border, which kind of sucks for them. I think they're good enough to be a 3. I hope they're a 3, but they could fall to a 4. I just don't think it's worth the risk to try to play Iowa and probably Ohio State back to back on consecutive days when you have, you know, your best player, one of the 3-4 best players in the Big Ten and an All-American having a knee issue. I mean, I think you should shut her down, shut Lily Meester down. If you could beat Michigan, who I expect to probably play Indiana on Friday night, then that's good. But there's no reason to push it to beat Iowa when maybe it locks you in as a 3 instead of a 4, you know, and because I don't know that they get up to a 2 line anyway. So, but that said, that's their team. They know how she feels and what she can do. And then with Molly Davis, This is the one blessing for the Hawkeyes in a lot of ways is that they do have that extra week. So she has this full week. She has all of next week. And then she has, you know, part of the following week. So she gets 2.5 weeks to kind of figure out where she is. And then, you know, worst case scenario, even if she's not real ready for that first weekend, that Iowa's playing a 16 or a 15 right out of the gate. And then, you know, the second game could be a little tricky, but I think, you know, that might be the same type of scenario because my guess, I'm not a doctor and I don't know specifics, Rob, maybe you would have a little more insight than I do. It sounds to me like a sprained knee, you know, the sprained ligament.
Worried. I got a still shot of it and yeah. She was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
So I, you know, your mind immediately goes to, oh no, it's a ACL meniscus, something yeah. like that. But that she has a chance to come back is good news.
Yeah. That means the ACL is not torn. Yeah. And that's really important. So, you know, I think back to football players who've had that, you know, it's again, different sport, yeah. you know, you a lot of times, you know, they just grit through it. They drain their knee and they do it. And I'm sure she's kind of in that position too, to some extent, but you know, it would be, to me, it would behoove Iowa, just do what you can. And if you can't play her that first weekend, that's okay. You know, I think Iowa has the personnel to they should be able to beat an 8 seed or a, you know, a 7 seed in the second round at Carver Hawkeye Arena without yeah. her. And then it comes down to, you know, Sweet 16, you know, can you play? Because, yeah. you know, you're going to need to. And can you play effectively, too? That's another factor. I mean, Molly Davis at 80%, is she better than Kylie Feuerbach at 100? Or, you know, that's where the coaches come in.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, she's integral part of what this team has been able to do. And she's, you know, when they went small and put her in the starting lineup, things began to click for this team. So that's what they're used to. And that's how they've succeeded. Having said that, her absence really shortens the bench more than anything, because Sydney Falter can come in. And I would submit that you don't lose a lot. What you lose maybe offensively, you gain defensively with Sydney. She's tough. She rebounds. It's a different type of player, but I don't think there's a drop off with the starting lineup. It's the drop off is bringing Sydney off the bench. You don't have that now. Like you said, Kylie Feuerbach, Taylor McCabe, kids like that are going to need to step up their games a little bit now.
Yeah. And you're probably going to see, you know, cause with the bench, they're going to have to change their rotations a little bit and their style. And that probably will include more Addison O'Grady and Sharon Goodman, even coming all the way down. And, you know, the player who's really stepped up the last few weeks anyway, you know, has been Kylie Feuerbach.
Yep.
And she had 3 steals in 2 minutes the other day. I mean, really is, you know, very fast, you know, can hit threes. I'm glad to see her getting more minutes because I think she adds that dimension. She's a lot like Gabby Marshall and maybe a little bit more aggressive at times. And so I think you get that element on there. Now, whereas Molly Davis is a great ball handler And she allows Caitlin to move off the ball, set her up, you know, get her a pick and, you know, and pick and roll or, you know, pick and go, whatever you want to do with her. That's what you lose a little bit more with her. Offensively, they can make up for that as far as shooting the ball defensively, but she's just kind of this, you know, water bug. Yeah. She just gets in the way. She does all the little tough things. It's hard to
clutch too. Yeah. I mean, if you leave her open, she'll beat you. You saw it when she kind of came in the lineup earlier this year. Teams were leaving her alone from three and not paying as, you know, maybe helping off of her. She quickly changed that narrative, and teams don't help off of her as much.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but if they can, you know, I'd imagine what Sydney will probably be in the lineup to start. Although, you know, starting in basketball is a little ceremonial. I like when Iowa could go four guards, because if they can run, they're the best team in the country at that. That no team can beat them if they're running and gunning and connecting, that they are as tough as it comes. But, you know, that said, you know, Sydney is, you know, she could have, you could have made a very good case that she was the sixth woman of the year in the Big Ten. She is grit and toughness, and kind of like a, even though she's not from Iowa, man, she's she's Iowa all the way, you know, just what she's, you expect. Like,
got a little Kate Martin in her.
Yeah.
She doesn't shoot it as well from the outside yet. Maybe she'll, you know, develop that part of her game, but she, kid rebounds, man. Mm-hmm. Kid rebounds for her size and defends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is a gritty glue person, you know, and, you know, the player that I think everybody wants to see more of, and at times can really take that step forward, is Taylor McCabe. And she's going to get a little bit more of an opportunity too, and she can really shoot it. You know, in her case, it's, you know, she's kind of held back because of Caitlin Clark, you know, otherwise she'd play a lot more, but I don't think she's quite the defender, certainly as Kylie Fehrbach or Sydney Falter or whatever, but she's going to get a more of an opportunity too. And so they've got enough to close ranks. They got enough to, you know, get to Sunday, and then Sunday's a coin flip. Ohio State's a great team. And there's a reason why they were number two. There's a reason why they're number four. There's a reason why they won the Big Ten outright, and Iowa was one game behind them. And I'm sure that if they can get to Sunday, both of those two teams, which I'm sure CBS is rooting for, there's another game that sets a record, you know, because now Iowa's what, the sixth highest games and rated games in network history right now. And the only one that's, you know, CBS will be there for sure, because they don't really show much women's basketball. And then the only one left is ESPN, which they'll get in the tournament if that's what they want.
No doubt. Yeah. And, from a TV perspective, I found the news that Fox was considering chipping in NIL to keep Caitlin in college. There were, I guess, preliminary discussions before she announced that she was going. Man, if that doesn't speak to her power and her influence on athletics, I don't know what does.
Yeah, I don't like that, Rob, at all. I think that's...
I agree with you.
You know, not that... I mean, you know, everybody here obviously would want to see Caitlin Clark one more year, but this is the right path for her. This was the right path all along. Her trajectory takes her to the next level. And Lord knows what I saw last week in Indianapolis after she declared. And it certainly... You know, she's energized the WNBA like no player ever could, but... I mean, the TV networks have too much power as it is. They have effectively killed off multiple conferences, Pac-12 most recently, yep. The Big East in the previous era, and, you know, Southwest Conference going back to to the 90s. So there's TV has been a really, you know, it's been a positive and a negative, and I would not want to see Fox, you know, now Fox could talk to its advertisers and sponsors and say, you know, we would like to have this person back, and, you know, maybe you go sign her if she's available. But I think that would be a dangerous precedent. But it does speak to the Caitlin Clark effect, that when you look at these ratings, I mean,
look at the early ticket sales already for the WNBA. She hasn't even been drafted yet.
I mean, $400 a pop for the New York Liberty game. I mean, you know, we talked right after, right, absolutely right after that got announced last Thursday in Indianapolis. And I think it was by Friday that the lower bowl had been sold out for the season. That is amazing. And that's what people are buzzing about more than the combine, certainly more than the Pacers, even though they got some great players. But it was, you know, they're going to be a playoff team. But Caitlin Clark is going to come to Indiana. That was something that really captivated everybody there.
I think I saw Rebecca Lobo tweet this, Scott, about the WNBA TV contract. Is that up after this season or after 25? Do you know? It's one of the two. I know it's within the next few years. And
I think it's 25, but I don't quote me on that. Okay. I think so. But even so, you know, look at the energy that she brings. And then next year you're going to have Paige Buchers that comes in and has that type of impact and wherever she goes. And you know, women's basketball is on the rise for sure. And as you said on Sunday, when you see Maya Moore, that kind of like, okay, you know, that was Caitlin's hero growing up, you know, and then you see Lynette Woodard, you know, and, you know, honestly, this is, you know, some people were, you know, been chiding, sniping at anything they can Caitlin Clark related. Well, what about this? I would argue that that was her passing Lynette Woodard brought Lynette Woodard to the forefront. And then Iowa graciously bringing her to the game, allowing her to be introduced and getting a standing ovation. Yeah, that doesn't happen, you know, without Caitlin Clark. And now people are recognizing the women of the past who've really set the stage for the women today. And then now it's the baton has been passed. And the WNBA, what we'll see this weekend in Minneapolis, what we'll see in the NCAA tournament, I'm sure they're crossing their fingers, hoping that
Albany and Portland are like, no, we want Iowa.
Yeah, I know.
The two sites for the Sweet 16.
Exactly. So, you know, whether if Iowa loses on Sunday, they're probably a two seed and they'll probably want them. Portland with Stanford, like last year would have been, you know, if they're a number one seed, I don't know where they'll end up. I mean, I hate having it in those two towns.
I know.
It's the dumbest thing the NCAA. I mean, the NCAA is full of dumbness, you know, and bureaucracy in so many ways. But this one wasn't one of their brightest ideas. I mean, why not have it at like a hub city, you know, in Atlanta or Denver, a Phoenix, a Chicago, an Indianapolis, you know, a place where people can get to it, Dallas, Texas, Houston, whatever, even L.A., even New York. Instead, Albany, New York, and Portland, Oregon. And for fans, for Iowa fans, if they were playing in Indianapolis or Chicago or even Dallas, they might hop in the car and go. They might spend that money. But, man, it's going to cost $1,000 a flight to get there, and then the hotel rooms rates are jacked because, you know, Portland might be a little different. But Albany, I'm sure, it's like Des Moines. So I don't see the rationale for this. Cleveland will be different, but.
Yeah. Albany, for those that don't have the geography down for New York, the state is about 3 hours north of New York City. So you can fly into New York if you're, you know, if Iowa ends up there, and then drive up from like Newark or one of the New York airports, or you can fly into Albany and it'll cost you, as Scott said, it's like, it's not Albany is the capital of New York, but it's not a big city. There's cities around, like smaller towns and cities around it. It's called the Capital District, but it's not a place that you would think would host something of this caliber, of this magnitude. So it'll be interesting to see how they do.
Yeah. And so it's kind of a thumb your nose in some ways to, you know, first of all, they consolidated it, which I understand. I mean, it saves on overhead and in so many different areas you can improve, but why those cities? I mean, they're just so far away. Last year was Seattle, and you know, this year Portland. Okay, there's still major markets, but you know, you're moving away the middle of America, and as Caitlin Clark has shown, the middle of America is the heartbeat of this tournament. And you know, Caitlin Clark, there's a reason why she's so popular, and it's because she's accessible to the heartland of this country. You know, from Ohio to Nebraska and all around, that she goes and all these people go follow her. And I just do not see the logic in this, but it is what it is. So you got to deal with it, but they got to get there and they got to win. But if they get to Cleveland, I think there'll be an exodus of Iowa fans going to Cleveland.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm sure tickets for that are already going highly on the secondary market, especially the good seats. But yeah, as Scott said, they've got to get there first, and that starts this weekend. And Wisconsin and Penn State play today, Scott, 5:30 Central Time on Big Ten Network. And again, today is Thursday, March the 7th. The winner of that game will play Iowa tomorrow at 5:30. So that, again, that's Wisconsin and Penn State. Against the winner gets Iowa on Friday, tomorrow. And got to like Iowa's chances there. Penn State's a decent team, but Iowa handled them relatively easy here. Wisconsin, did Iowa play them twice? I know they beat them up there. Did they beat them here too?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they've only beat them 29 times in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
it's true.
Should Iowa win on Friday, the semifinals on Saturday would be the first game, which is the top of the bracket, which is where Ohio State and Michigan State is the number 4 seed. So they're the other team that got the double bye. They would play at 1 p.m. Central Time on Saturday, on Saturday the 9th. And then the Iowa, presumably Indiana game would be Saturday, 25 minutes after the end of the first game. So roughly 3:30, 3:45 on Saturday. And then Sunday, 11 a.m., as Scott said, on CBS would be the championship game this weekend. So I know everybody who isn't making the way to Minneapolis will be eyes glued on the TV. And it is important. It's cool that there's something to play for here, because you win this thing and you're a number one seed. Is it a huge difference between a number one and number two seed, especially with what we were talking about with the Portland and Albany kind of dictating where they go in the second round? Not huge, but there's something to be said for being that number one seed and having a chance to kind of dictate things, where your path is, what your matchups look like moving on into the tournament.
Yeah, and it's prestigious. Yeah. I remember last year they were a little bit, they didn't bother them that much, but you could tell that they were like a little disappointed that they didn't get that, number one. But I've seen, some mocks, and I would say it appears that South Carolina is for sure going to be a number one. I would say the winner of the Pac-12 will be a number one in their last year, whether that's Stanford or USC is really coming on strong, or UCLA, whoever wins there, then Ohio State, between Ohio State and Iowa. And then it's kind of everybody else, Texas, although they lost, I guess, last week, Texas could be in that boat. It just kind of depends on, what it all turns out. So it could be the Pac-12 number two. It could be the Big Ten number two. It could be Texas. Heck, it could even be LSU if they upset South Carolina, that's the game I'm sure everybody would want to see at some point. LSU, Iowa. I don't know how much, how that would work, but I think, Iowa, UConn in the same, you wouldn't want that in Albany necessarily.
You would not want that in Albany.
That would be unfair.
Yes.
I think you would want them to play West. But still, that's also an outside team. But there's going to be good team. When they get to Sweet 16, they're good teams. We saw it last year and you're going to see it now. But then again, and this team doesn't have quite the, they're missing, especially with Molly Davis out, and McKenna Warnock brought a little bit different element. I think Hannah Stolke has compensated for that. She's a different player, but she's kind of compensated for the lack of Monica Zanano and McKenna Warnock. But at the same time, they're not quite as automatic in the post as they were a year ago because of them. So
I think at some point in the postseason, they're going to need quality minutes, quality stretches from Sharon Goodman and Addison O'Grady. I think if they want to get to where they want to get to, if they want to achieve their goals, they're going to need at least one, if not both of those players to give them positive minutes.
I agree. I think they're going to need at some point, a 10-point game from Addison O'Grady, you know, and maybe, you know, 5 of 8 from the field, maybe a couple of free throws too, some good rebounds, you know, force some fouls, you know, just be an important role player there. And same thing with Sharon Goodman, although on senior day, she didn't play a whole lot, but it's going to be important. And then of course you look at the other people, you know, Gabby Marshall has come on strong, just like she did last year. That needs to continue. Kylie Fierbach has come off the bench, you know, sizzling, you know, shooting threes and playing great defense. And that needs to, I mean, she had 4 steals the other day. That's unreal. You know, her plus minus is really high.
Almost from a defensive standpoint, too, you're going to need a big body because Hannah's undersized sometimes, especially against, you know, we talked about Mackenzie Holmes, players with, you know, height and skill. You're going to have somebody to at least slow the elite post players down that Iowa may face in the postseason.
Yeah. And if you've got a blueprint for how you can get beat decisively, it's the Indiana game. I mean, because you're going up against an elite post who dominated you, and then you've got good shooting guards. And, you know, the recipe's there. You're on the road at a rival who's good, you know, who you beat decisively, who won the league last year. They were coming off a bad loss. They had a lot of focus in that game. But, you know, still, that's a learning lesson. That's how do we manage that? And I would say, you know, I mean, when they're playing if they play Stanford, that's going to be a critical element.
Cameron Brink is legit.
Yeah. And so they're just going to have to be careful. And
you talked about LSU and South Carolina, both, we know, with dominant post players.
Right. And so there's all these elements that they have to be prepared for. And they will be. And if they play their style of basketball and not have to rely as much on the post, kind of like at the very beginning of the year when they played Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Because Elizabeth Kitley is a tremendous post player.
First-team All-American on for The Athletic.
Yeah, exactly. So. Terrific player, but they were able to kind of mitigate that a little bit just because of that they dictated tempo. But if they get caught in the half court, which they did against like Nebraska on the road or Ohio State the first time, or if they just can't match up with the post and at least give it a battle, then yeah, they can be beat. But sometimes it's also easy. We didn't get this way with football for sure. And basketball as well. You can see all the little weaknesses and the areas that could be exploited. And sometimes we don't look at the strengths, and the strengths are, of course, Iowa has the best player in the country. And she's, you know, once you cross the half court line, she's within range. And she distributes better than everybody too. I mean, she leads the country in scoring and assists. That's just unbelievable. And she's done it for multiple years. 2 years ago, she should have been player of the year too. Do the same thing. And then you have some really good role players like Kate Martin, who's come on strong, and Gabby Marshall. So they're more than capable of holding their own. But as you said, in the post, you know, and this is why Jan Jensen's the post whisperer. She's just going to have to do it.
Yes. And the aforementioned best player in the country, tough week for she's going to lose money by going pro crowd as she adds Gainbridge Investments and Panini America. For those that are not familiar with the trading card industry, Panini America is the giant. It's the Tops now. Of the industry, they took over that them and Fanatics. I think there's some. It's tough to keep up with what's going on with that, but suffice it to say, it's a major endorsement. So I wouldn't expect those to be the only two, Scott.
No, not at all. Not Gainbridge. You know, that's the sponsorship for the arena in Indianapolis. So she's loading up. She, you know, so you know, $750,000 she's supposedly losing, which is bullshit. She's not losing a damn cent. She doesn't take anything from the collective here.
Yep.
So she's only gaining more money now going forward. And, you know, I'm sure there was somebody who might have paid that to keep her here. But, you know, it's more than money. I mean, but she's going to get plenty of it. You know, she's going to be able to, you know,
she's ready for another challenge. I don't want to disparage any of the college players that she competes against, but she needs another challenge.
She's the best player in the sport. She already owns all the records. You know, I mean, she just passed Pete Maravich. And I know that there's been
that cut up on.
I haven't watched it yet.
It's pretty cool. It is pretty cool because you talk about the comparisons, the way they are magicians with the basketball.
Yeah.
And it really points it out that, you know, the comparisons and the similarities that they have in their game.
It's interesting. You know, a lot of people have said, well, you know, he only did it in 3 years. He didn't have a 3-point shot. You know, that's all well and good. But, you know, Caitlin has shot it, you know, she's shot 2,593 times in 3 years. Pete shot at 3,166. So he averaged 38 shots a game. She's averaging less than 20. So, and of course, oh, by the way, she's what, fifth or fourth all time now in assists.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, she's,
I just think, like you said before, I just think I don't get as much into the, who's better? Like, who's the GOAT? To me, the coolest part of all of this is people getting to see what Pistol Pete was like. Because people, I mean, nobody knows what he was like. But you put a video together and, you know, intertwine what Caitlin is doing to what he's doing. And you're like, wow, that guy was good. And you maybe never saw a video of what Pistol Pete was like. Or Lynette Woodard. Or Maya Moore, even. And she's not even that old. But to bring... And I'd like to see some of that in the local realm too, because Vivian had some, she had some of the best players in the world. Michelle Edwards was one of the best players in the world when she played. And she played here. You know, Tony Foster, you know, go down the list of the Tangela Smith, go down the list of some of the great players that played in this program. And hopefully people get to know, the, you know, the newer generations get to know some of those great Iowa players too.
Well, exactly. I mean, and I would even argue that up until Megan, you know, a lot of that seems like history, almost ancient history here. You know, people know Megan Gustafson, although Kathleen Doyle has kind of faded off, and she was only the Big Ten Player of the Year
Sam Logic.
Yeah. I was going to bring them up. You know, Sam and Allie, Kasheen Alexander. Some of the players that played in the early part of the last decade were fantastic.
Lindsay Meter.
Right.
Jenny Willis, now Jenny Barancha. I mean, there were really good players. There have been some – this has been a really proud program for a lot of years.
And it might be tough to get Jenny to come back, but maybe in a few years.
She's a little busy.
I mean. Yeah, maybe in a few years, if you know what I mean. But
they won the Big 12, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So
she. But you know, we'll see. She could be a. That would be a definite coming home moment if that happens. But
yeah, you look at all the. I mean, there are a lot of former Iowa women's basketball players. I tweeted this out the other day. The amount of former women's basketball players from Iowa that are in the coaching industry right now. Mm-hmm. You know, from Tangela Smith's an assistant at Northwestern. You know, Michelle Edwards is an assistant coach. Shannon Perry is at UCLA. Karis Consuegra coaches at NC Charlotte. She's the head coach. We mentioned Baranchek. Jamie Brandt, former Jamie Prinney, coaches at Liberty High. I mean, just Joelette Law is still involved in coaching.
Yeah.
Nicole Tunsil, another name from the past. She's still involved in coaching. So great history. And that's the coolest part of this Caitlin stuff. Not only shining a light on Iowa history for Iowa women's basketball program, but the sport overall for men and women like Pistol Pete and, you know, some of the greats of the game.
Yeah. And then, you know, and what probably infuriates me the most are, you know, are the people that want to make a fight about it, you know, and like, well, what about Pearl Monroe? You know, and it's like, did you even hear about her 2 weeks ago? Yeah. No, you just heard about her because, you know, and
let's face it. She's been gracious. If you've seen interviews with her, she's like, God, I love Caitlin Clark. People know who I am, and people are giving me credit for what I did.
Exactly. And that's the best part, that it brings these names out, that people can recognize their greatness, no matter what their level of, you know, but instead of, you know, dickhead fans who are like, oh, what about this? You know, oh, he only did this. It's like, guys, respect Caitlin Clark.
There's room for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I say she's the greatest, don't say, well, what about, oh, she didn't get all the points. You know, well, if she decided to cut those assists in half and score, then maybe she would be there. But instead, she's an unselfish player, despite, you know, your stereotype of her.
Yeah, nobody needs to. I mean, it's silly to try to argue with people that are not going to listen and not going to appreciate the sport itself and all of the great players that have helped build the sport up. Yeah. And we've seen, you know, some of the pioneers of women's basketball, Lynette Woodard being one of them, getting it to a certain point. And then, you know, Maya Moore, and then, you know, players like Sue Bird and Lisa Leslie, and how they've kind of raised the WNBA through the years to a point. And now you've got a player that can take it to the next level. That's what you want. Nobody should be against that. That's good.
Right. And, you know, and I think Aaliyah Boston's been terrific, you know, doing broadcasts, you know, on Peacock, and I can only imagine what's going through her mind playing with Caitlin because of the passing. She's gonna eat.
Well, big time. She knows that.
Yeah. You know, it's gonna be fun to watch, just because, you know, again, no offense to anybody Caitlin's played with, or, you know, over her career. She's never played with a post like that, with those kind of hands and that kind of ability. And so I think this is gonna be unbelievable to watch.
No doubt. And it's nice to know that we've spent about 40 minutes on women's basketball to start this podcast. That gives you a little indication of what she's done for this sport and what the Iowa women's basketball program has meant to not only the local people, but people nationally and internationally. So great to have a chance to talk about that. We're going to take a break now, and then we'll come back and get on to the men's basketball talk, wrestling, a little football, a little baseball. Need to bring up my read here. Here we go. Support for this podcast comes from Systems Unlimited, celebrating 50 years of providing services to people living with disabilities and mental health needs throughout East Central Iowa. A list of their services and upcoming events can be found at sui.org. That is sui.org. Systems Unlimited. We appreciate them supporting this podcast, but especially appreciate the great work they've done in the community for over half a century and the people that they look after. So thank you to Systems Unlimited. We're going to hear from a few more sponsors, and Scott and I will be back on the other side. Hang in there.
Hi, this is AJ Perez, managing partner at Deary Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Waukee and Iowa City. I'm so proud of our team at both locations. We are committed to one thing, giving our customers the absolute best when it comes to service and a car buying experience. The kind of experience that brings you back. What makes us different? We believe at Deary, we don't just sell cars, we help people buy them.
Do you need a great electrical contractor or fire and water restoration specialist? Well, contact Lance Bolin at LB Electric and LJ Construction in North Liberty. Lance has served the corridor for many years and is ready to help you. Call Lance Bolin at 319-640-1116. That's 319-640-1116. Or visit LJ_construction on Instagram for licensed and insured electrical work, fire and water restoration, and remodeling.
And we are back here on the Hawkeye Hotspot podcast. You know what, Scott? Switching is easy. We do it all the time. We switch on the lights. We switch TV channels. Some of us switch partners while square dancing. That applies to Scott. Well, maybe that's a little bit of a stretch. But what's not a stretch is how you can switch and save with State Farm. In fact, State Farm agent Chad Birch, right here in Iowa, can switch you over so you can start saving today. Chad and his team are ready to welcome you to the State Farm neighborhood. With Chad Birch, it's easy to switch and save. Just give him a call. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And that ties in with our conversation about Caitlin Clark, because you may have noticed State Farm sponsors her as well.
Yeah, I think we've known that for a little while. If you watched any of the games,
hey, Jake from State Farm was there.
Yes,
at Carver on Sunday,
like a good neighbor, he was
awesome
there.
Stuff yeah, watching yeah. like him interact with Travis Scott, it was just surreal. Some of that stuff was just Nolan Ryan. I mean, that was just the kind of like, wow, this is nuts.
I know. I mean, you know, did you have them on your bingo card? I mean,
no.
Maybe Travis Scott, because I mean, he's been interacting with Caitlin for a few years.
Yeah.
Jake from State Farm, that makes sense. It's kind of like when the Bush Light guy went to Ames for an yeah. Iowa State game. But Nolan Ryan was one I was not expecting to show up for to watch Caitlin Clark play in Iowa City on our senior
day. Some good coin for those seats, too.
Yeah. I saw what, $7,000 or something like that.
For five seats.
Wow. But
he's got it.
Yeah, he's got it. He's got it. He had a pretty nice career.
He likes the Carver popcorn, man. He was wailing on some popcorn. Yeah. When I was trying to take pictures of him, I had to wait for him to get done eating his popcorn.
Yeah.
I wonder if he got a Carver cone.
I don't know. He needs to come back and find out.
Yeah, he's not doing it right if he didn't get the Carver cone.
Right.
But he probably didn't want to have to wait on that line, but he could have paid somebody money to stand on line for him.
He probably should have. Or they should have had some ushers come and bring him some stuff.
That would be a novel idea, wouldn't it? To have people in the stands giving, you know, selling popcorn, hot dogs, things like that.
Yeah,
like
beer.
Transport.
Yeah.
Of course, down into the seats.
Exactly. Have more than one bathroom at the ground floor where you don't have
a lot of crazy ideas.
You know, on Sunday, it was during a TV timeout. I'm like, I got to go. I'm rushing. And I just went, you know, ran down there. And some guy was walking there. I kind of ran around him. And then he started yelling at me in the bathroom. You got in line. I'm like, I ran here.
All spirit and love, war, and get into the bathroom.
I know. And it was like, he's like, you must think you're pretty important, huh? And I'm like,
no, I got
to
go.
I just go to the bathroom, man. You know, you're walking, I'm running. You know, I don't have a time here, you know. You know, and so it's just, you're lucky I don't turn around.
last Sunday was sold out, Scott, for the women's game. No surprise there. But it's good to see we got word this morning that this Sunday's game at Carver Hawkeye Arena, the Iowa men playing host to Illinois, Illinois coming off a tough loss at home to Purdue the other night, which clinched the Big Ten championship, regular season championship for Purdue. Illinois coming to Carver on Sunday. I wonder what type of filter, if that's the right word, or I don't know if precautions, what they did to make sure that the Orange Crush didn't buy a bunch of those tickets. That's what I'm wondering when I see that.
Yes, I know. I thought that as soon as I wondered it anyway. And then when I saw that it was sold out, I'm like, I've seen too many times this.
Yep.
And then remember, I mean, it was last year, but it feels like 4 years ago when they used the boys club to try to get in and then Iowa caught them and gave them to, you know, get, well, they tried to use their own charity and then it was BS. Yeah. So then they gave them to the Cedar Rapids Boys and Girls Club. I thought that was a nice try guy, you know, type of moment. But I think we know when they play Illinois, you do see orange
a lot.
Anyway. Yeah. I mean, a substantial amount. It is for all that it doesn't do in football, it does three times more in basketball. I mean, they make more, they're one of the two or three schools in the Big Ten that actually make more money off basketball tickets than they do football tickets. So, and plus they're a good team. You know, they lost last night or was last night or two nights ago. I get all these days
mixed up. Tuesday night, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, to Purdue, which gave Purdue the championship. But, they're a team I think that's capable of, you know, of all the Big Ten teams, I think they're the one that can actually do something in the tournament, you know, other than
Illinois.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, because Northwestern, I really liked earlier in the season, but then with the injuries that they've sustained, you know, Berry originally, and then now Nicholson's out. So I don't know what to expect from Northwestern, but this is – I'm with you. I think this is a really top-heavy league with Purdue maybe in its own tier, Illinois in its own tier, and then everybody else.
Yeah, and Northwestern's got to be careful. I mean, if they lose – say they lose this weekend and they play Minnesota, but you never know. And then are one and done in the tournament. They could be out.
Yeah.
You know, they could be like kind of like Iowa in 14, you know, that they just had this last run and yeah, the injuries matter, but their net is at 53. They're just a little bit above Iowa. And, you know, I don't know what you think of the net, Rob. I don't know what you like, if you like it or don't like it, but one thing I found just perplexing about it is that some teams can just lose their ass and still not move. Now the Big 12 is just it bought in and it got in. And then now they're all, you know, nine teams are locked, you know, from 40 or 10 or locked 45 and up. But I look like Michigan State, you know, they just, yeah, they beat Northwestern the other day, but they were really reeling, and they still are like 22 for the net.
Yeah, that's the thing for me. Yeah, I watched the game last night. They had to scrap to beat a depleted Northwestern team last night at home on senior night, where Tom Izzo's son was being honored too. Yeah. I mean, you would figure emotionally Michigan, and they did. They pulled through with that emotion. But to me, the biggest problem with the net, Scott, is – when the numbers are so far away from the eye test, you know what I mean? When you look at Michigan State, you don't see the number 20, you don't see a close to the number 22 team in the country. That to me is where you have to look at whatever metrics and analytics you're using and say something is not right here.
Yeah. And there's several that are in the same ballpark the other way. I mean, the high net teams that don't fit it for me, Wisconsin is 23. Yeah. I mean, I'm like, they should be at best an 8 or 9 seed. I mean, they've been reeling for a while. BYU is 12. You know, I mean, Iowa State to me is worthy of the top 10 where they are, but then, you know, you go to, you know, Cincinnati was 6 and 10 in the Big 12. Does it deserve to be in the net? Now, I understand it's a tough league, probably as good or better than any other league, but does it deserve to be 45 in the net, you know, 15 and 13 and going on? But then on the flip side, I look at a team like South Carolina, which has, you know, is perpetually in the mid 40s. And it's one of the better teams in the country, in my opinion. I mean, I think they're like a 6th or 5 seed type of thing. And so it's just, it baffles me. I mean, Gonzaga is supposedly on the bubble and they're like a 17. So yeah. I don't know how you do it. I don't know which way you're going to do it, but I'm not a fan of it. And it's not because Iowa's on the bubble. They deserve to be on the bubble based on their quality of work, but it's just as a whole that I'm perplexed by, you know, probably by the Big Ten teams, most of all, Michigan State and Wisconsin. I just don't see them being there. I think Nebraska is going to get in, and they might actually win a game this year, maybe. And then we'll go from there.
Yeah, you look at the standings heading into the weekend, Scott. I don't know who plays tonight, but Purdue 16-3 in the league. Like we said, they've won the regular season. Illinois locked into that number 2 seed for the Big Ten tournament at 13-6. So those are two of the four double byes that we'll have next week. After that, Iowa still is in the picture. Needs some help. Needs to win Sunday and get some help. But the double bye is actually still alive when you look at head-to-head here. And we'll see. I mean, you can't go into Sunday and say to yourself, you would be hard pressed to think that there would be more to play for, from honoring your seniors to playing a, you know, a hated rival to getting yourself farther onto the right side of the bubble to potentially getting a double bye in the Big Ten tournament. There is a shitload on the line Sunday.
This is the, if this is their win, it'd be the biggest win that they've had all year. You know, and they've had some nice wins the last few weeks, starting with Wisconsin in overtime, at Michigan State, at Northwestern. You know, Penn State was a good win and when they needed to get. But this one is at the top of the list against Illinois. And as you said, because when you start to look at the rest of the league, Northwestern is 11-8. Nebraska is 11-8. Wisconsin, have they played Rutgers yet? I don't think they have. I think that's tonight. And they could be 11-8. Iowa's 10-9. Michigan State's 10-9. Against all of them, Iowa has tiebreakers if it gets into that four seed, you know, area. And what an amazing turn of events that would be if they can get into that situation where, Rob, just a couple weeks ago before the Wisconsin game, we're wondering if this team can even get to the NIT. And so it has been a remarkable turnaround. And I'm glad it's sold out. This has been, you know, I think Fran, if it's not his best coaching job, it's right there at the top of the list, because unlike the other years that we've seen, the other years they had guys you knew that were going to be kind of their bell cows, you know, whether it's Garza or Utah or, you know, Chris Murray or Keegan Murray or Chris Murray, all the way back, Aaron White, Matt Gatens, whatever. This year was not that way. We really did not know how they were going to be. And we kind of looked at them like they were going to be like this, what, 2017 season, where they just had a lot of new guys and they couldn't quite coalesce. They went the other way. And now they look, now they're really solid. And they're one of those teams that people are like, dang, we don't want to play them, you know, because Tony Perkins is a tough ass point guard. Baton Sanford is shooting his ass off. Josh Dix is coming out of nowhere, three straight 20 point games. Best defender they've had in the backcourt in a long time.
You've watched this program for a while. I was trying to think, and I tweeted this out, just a guy who has made the jump that Josh has made from freshman to sophomore year. I think, you know, Keegan Murray obviously he's the poster guy for making a huge jump. And, but I would say that he probably came in more ready than Josh, particularly because of the gruesome injury that Josh had to overcome and come back from. But he's gone from, you know, just kind of a couple minute role player last year to all Big Ten caliber two-way guard. And it's just been awesome to see.
It certainly has. I'm trying to rack my brain, trying to think of who kind of fits that to some extent. And, you know, and the players that I'm thinking of, they made jumps, but they're not as big of jumps as he's made. Peter Jock, maybe to some extent. Different player, of course, you know, Keegan Murray. And I think Keegan would have played a lot more had he done a different team that year. Yeah. He was more of an off the bench because that's where they needed to be. But to do this in the backcourt and go from, I mean, he was deer in the headlights at Iowa State. Yep. You know, he had two turnovers in that first, you know, couple of sequences and he was out of the game and it was like, okay, this is too big for you. And now he's owning the court and he's two way, as you said. I mean, he's the type of guy that, you know, if you could go back and replay some of these games that you lost close, you'd get him on the floor. You'd make sure against Maryland that you're the one defended, you know, you're the one doing this. And then it's allowed Peyton Sanford to really free him up a little bit offensively. And then your post players, you know, we see what we see, the sky's the limit on Owen Freeman and Ben Cricke has been better. You know, he was good, really good early. Then you then got a rude awakening, I think, in the Big Ten. And now he's kind of adjusted and, you know, playing his game. And this to me looks like a tournament team, whether they get there or not. You know, I mean, Illinois is a really good team. You can't just automatically say, yeah, they're going to win, or, you know, they get to the Big Ten tournament. We've seen good Big Ten teams get upset a lot in the tournament. But I look at this team and I think, yeah, they could go into the big, they can go to the NCAA tournament and not look out of place and look competitive. And if they win on Sunday, it's, I'll say it, it's the best coaching job Fran McCaffrey's had. And it's probably the best coaching job we've seen in the Big Ten at Iowa since Tom Davis back in 99.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think just from a, again, this doesn't happen in a vacuum, and there are other results around the country that will impact Iowa. But I think to get yourself in that in position to be for the committee to discuss what, you know, your merits, you got to win two more, whether that is Sunday and the first game in the Big Ten tournament, or lose Sunday, win the first game of the Big Ten tournament, and then probably get Illinois on that Friday. It's kind of lining up where Illinois might, they may get Illinois twice in a week. You got to get another quality quad one type win on your resume, I think, if you're Iowa.
Yeah, because I went through like a bunch of the teams that are kind of in that hunt for the, you know, I would say the last three or four spots. And, you know, and when you look at like quad one and two wins, you know, like South Carolina to me shouldn't even be in that position based on, but on its net it is. But, you know, you look at Iowa and getting, you know, eight quad one, quad two wins. That's the same as Colorado State. That's the same as Utah. One behind St. John's, one ahead of Nevada and Pittsburgh. You know, Iowa only has one quad three / quad four loss, and that was Michigan. That was
what
a
million
years ago.
What if Nevada gets in ahead of Iowa?
What if they play in Dayton?
Yeah, I think there'd be some interest in that.
Yeah, I still think locally that, you know, people of a certain age would, you know, be really interested in that game, you know. But yeah, I could see him playing to Dayton. That would be interesting. But you know, I mean, you go through Iowa's lines, and quad one right now, they're 3-8, 5-3, quad two, 4-1, quad three, and that was the Michigan loss, and then 6-0. And you know, seems like SMU, which is in the same ballpark, 0-5 in quad one. They only have two quad two wins, you know, and then they have a pair of losses, one quad three, one quad four. I mean, that's NIT all the way to me, you know, especially being in a lesser league. You know, St. John's is one that probably, you know, they have a total of nine and only one quad three loss. I mean, they're probably in that ballpark. But the interesting one is like Drake, you know, which is still higher than
that. What are they in the net? Like 45, 40?
48.
Okay, so yeah.
You know, they've got five quad ones.
And I've seen people, Scott, just say, hey, the Valley's a one-bid league no matter what. I don't understand why Drake would not be in consideration.
Well, yeah, I'm there with you. I mean, when you look at their net, you to me, you know, anything above, certainly above 50, probably 60, you've got to really start to analyze, or do they belong?
Yeah.
And Drake is 25-6, and they have five quad one or quad two wins, and they have two, you know, three or four quad three or four losses. But, you know, that's a team you've got to be cognizant of. And Indiana State is way ahead of them. This is one of those where, you know, if you're Iowa, you're rooting against a lot of these teams as well as you're rooting for yourself. And Drake is one that you may feel weird about, but you might want to root against, because if they get beat, then they might send them down a little bit. And then it's Big Ten versus Valley second team. And, you know, you might have, you know, Gary Reima complaining, but nobody else.
I saw yesterday, Gary was telling, he was, advising Doc Rivers to give AJ Green more minutes up in Milwaukee. So I don't know if Doc heard that or taking that to heart, but hopefully he does.
I'm sure somebody showed him and he's like, you know what? You're right.
Oh, Gary. Gary's a character.
A bullseye.
Just to close the men's basketball discussion, Scott, because we're getting a little bit short on time here. It's not a great matchup against Illinois. I think we saw that in Champaign recently. But also Iowa has some pieces that give Illinois problems too. It's kind of like who can get their game, who imposes their style and will on the game. Both can score a ton, and both have, you know, dynamic players. You know, Shannon is one of the better players in the league. Coleman Hawkins is a tough matchup for Iowa. We saw that in the first game where they started Cricky on him, but had to pull Ben off. It was just a tough matchup. And then they kind of mix and match on matching up with him. It'll be interesting to see who can take advantage of their advantages, so to speak, on Sunday.
Yeah, that's, you know, styles make fights, styles make great matchups, and you have to play the game. And that's the best part of it, you know, because going against Terrence Shannon, even somebody like Josh Dix is not going to hold him down forever. He's just too good. But you're going to have to figure it out. And you're going to have to figure out, you know, you're going to have to mix your defenses and, you know, shift to his zone once in a while. You know, don't always go man, because they're better. They're quicker off the ball. And yet Iowa can shoot. Iowa can, you know, when Iowa's running and gunning, they're not an easy team to defend at all. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to like this matchup. I think the Big Ten has been smart for a few years in making this a season finale. You know, I remember it was like the last real game before COVID hit, and Luka missed that one shot that just that could have beaten Illinois. But these are, as you said, very intense rivals. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny because Iowa has just like weird rivalries in football. You know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Nebraska, and then there's Iowa State in pretty much all sports. And then you look at basketball, and it's like, no brainer. It's been Illinois for a century. They hate each other. They're Hatfields and McCoys. You know, they should bring back Bruce Pearl. You know,
that would be sing fun. The national anthem.
I know. Have them come, just go up in the stands, start shaking hands with people wearing orange. But to end this regular season with this heated matchup with a sold out environment where you're going to see some orange too. You're going to see some rubbing. They're going to argue, you know, remember times when I think it was Connor McCaffrey got nose to nose with some players, and in the handshake line, they went at it one time. And I love it. Two very intense coaches. I think this is what you want to see. And it's a great way to end the season. There's a lot at stake for Iowa, for sure.
Yep, it should be a great environment Sunday in Carver, as we've seen this year with the women's basketball team, and in some cases with the men's basketball team when they've been able to pull in a good crowd. It's a tough home environment, and we talked about it in football, Kinnick, north end zone, pre-snap penalties, things like that. So if you're going on Sunday, cheer loud and proud, because it does help, and Iowa – certainly could use that home course advantage that Illinois gets oftentimes down in Champaign. They have a great home environment there. Flip to wrestling here. Again, we don't have a ton of time here, and I apologize for that. We'll get more. We'll recap the Big Ten tournament more next week, because then we'll have an idea of what the NCAA championships look like. But Scott, no number one seeds for Iowa at the Big Ten tournament. Big Ten championships for wrestling. Drake Ayala at 125 is the highest seed. He is a 2. Riel Woods is 3 at 141. I know there were some. Caleb Rathjen is a 3 at 149. Jared Franek is a 4 at 157. Michael Caliendo is a 3 at 165. Patrick Kennedy is a 3 at 174.
Zach Glazer.
Zach Glazer's a 3 at 197. And then Bradley Hill is a 7 at heavyweight. I'm not sure. I did not catch Tom's press conference this week and what his thoughts are on Ben and redshirting Ben and what the parameters are for that. Do you know?
I did not listen either. I mean, we're kind of in the same boat. You don't have time to do everything here with this. And maybe this is the shame of wrestling this year, because, and it started with all the stuff with the gambling investigation and wiping out a lot of their athletes and then getting throttled, you know, against Michigan and Penn State, that it's been a lot more out of sight, out of mind. And there's nobody here that I think we're looking at saying they're going to win the national title. Now, it could happen. You know, Riel Woods could go to nationals and win it. Drake Ayala has been good, but they've lost some matches that you're like, wow, how did they lose that? So I think there's not as much intense interest, or maybe, dare I say, casual interest, because casual fans that normally would be like, oh yeah, how about the wrestling team? You know, they don't even care because it's well, you got Caitlin Clark and, right. You know, you got other things to worry about.
And the diehards are locked in anyway. The wrestling lifers and people that really enjoy this stuff know what's going on and probably are, if they're out there listening to us, they're like, these two idiots don't know what they're talking about. And I get that. But we want to give it attention, too. I think from a positive standpoint, Scott, I think Iowa wrestled its best duel at the end of the season at Oklahoma State. So hopefully for Iowa, that gives them some momentum coming into this because we've seen it before. 2-3 seed, you know, you're in position to win this thing. You're in position to be at the top of the podium at the Big Ten tournament. If you're in that, you know, top, and we've seen lower seeds than that even come and win championships. So you hope that I was able to build on that Oklahoma State momentum, take it into this weekend, and then put themselves in position to at least finish as high as it can when it comes to the national tournament. And I think most people, whether they be, you know, diehard wrestling fans or casual wrestling fans, understand that Penn State is the prohibitive favorite to win the national championship. But if your teams like Iowa and Oklahoma State, Michigan, whoever it may be, you want to do the best you can and challenge them as much as you can in the national tournament. And that begins this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, finishing second never sits well with Iowa fans, and I get it. And I agree with it. You know, this is the sport where, you know, you're the dominant program, or were the dominant program, and now Penn State has taken that mantle and you want it back. And this is just not the year that it's going to happen based off what we saw. But what you want is you want your team to wrestle their best, to wrestle up to their seed and be a little bit beyond, and compete at the highest level as possible. And I think, you know, it's hard to say what, if that was the case against Penn State. It certainly was not the case against Michigan. That was an embarrassment. And so they needed to get back, and I'm sure they're going to seek to and probably eliminate some of those issues that they had and maybe get some revenge in those matches. And I think in Iowa's case, gunning for number two, well, not a program goal. That's the best you can do. Dan Gable would always say, well, if you can't win it all, get the next best thing, and that's going to be the next best thing. So I think that's what they can accomplish. And if they can meet their seed or exceed it, then I think that's probably what they want to do. And I think, you know, for a couple of guys that have a chance, to really, if I was to point out like four guys that I think, you know what, they've got a chance to maybe even get all the way to the final night, and you want to see them wrestling at a better level, I think Drake Ayala is certainly one of them. Rial Woods, you know, that was a surprise, some of his loss. You know, at least the first loss was a real surprise to me. I think Jared Franek, this is his first year, but he's still, you know, a pretty good wrestler. I think he's got a chance to make something happen here in his final year. And then Patrick Kennedy, you know, he was a guy that missed out early on, and I think he's kind of an ascending guy at 74. I'd like to see them really take those steps forward. Not I don't want to see the others too, but I think those four in particular are guys that I think are capable of taking another step.
If there was one good thing or one positive thing that came out of the Penn State duel, it was Zach Glazier's match against Aaron Brooks. He hung with him. Yeah. And that's saying something when you're talking about Aaron Brooks. So we'll see. Hopefully he gets another crack, and you never know. You never know. That would be a major upset, but it at least gives you a little bit of hope there that they're, you know, it's not so lopsided that there's no chance that you're right. Like, there's no chance that so-and-so is not going to be able to compete. So you just, you know, you hope that you're peaking at the right time. Like I said, the Oklahoma State duel gave hope of that. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. That's in College Park, Maryland, the mecca of wrestling in College Park, Maryland this weekend. So a lot of big wrestling fans on the East Coast. New Jersey is a big wrestler. Pennsylvania that are in that area. So good for those folks that they'll have an easier way to get and watch the Big Ten championships. And I kind of like that they move it around a little bit. So Switching to football, Scott, Iowa with its sixth known verbal commitment in the 2025 recruiting class. So these are kids that will be, that are juniors now, will be seniors next year. So a ways before they get to Iowa. Eli Johnson is a 6'5", 230-pound junior tight end from River Falls. Watched his tape yesterday. River Falls uses him a lot of different ways. The film, he was in the slot, he was out wide, he was in line, very versatile receiver, advanced in that area. And with that body, you hope that, you know, he develops as a blocker as well. Really nice starter kit there for a position that obviously Iowa has thrived at. Also had offers from Michigan State, Minnesota, Iowa State, Kansas, Missouri, Purdue, Vandy, and West Virginia. So a good group of schools that were interested in him. He teams up with Thomas Meyer to give Iowa two. I think Meyer's the 10th ranked, according to the 247 composite. I think Meyer is ranked 10th nationally in the 2025 class at tight end. And I believe Johnson is in the 30-ish range, if I'm not mistaken.
34.
So that, you know, you want to lock up the positions that you are really good at. And they've done that in the 25 class here. Two really high quality tight ends in the initial portion of this class is a really helps this group to have, I think they're top 20 nationally. Again, it's so
early. They're 18, yeah.
It's so early that it's tough to look at class rankings. I'd rather focus on the position that they've secured. And that's good to see.
Yeah, they're sitting 18th, and you know, and those rankings to me are kind of laughable at this stage, because you want to wait really until you get to the summer, you know, after kind of their, you know, kind of reassess it in early July, and then look at it from there. But you know, they've got six pretty good players. They've got their quarterback in. They've got a couple linebackers. They seem to look like they're pretty much done there, although they have one more kind of hanging out. They got to get offensive line. I think that's the next step. A couple of guys. I know I included just players to watch in the next couple months. I think, you know, Mason Woods is a really interesting name, you know, because he's kind of considered a tight end, but will he get there? And do you really want three tight ends in your class, or will one move? I guess we'll find out. That's an easy problem to have. That's not a bad one.
I like him at safety. I mean, yeah. I've seen him in person since, you know, the last 3 years, and I really like him on that side of the ball too. So I think he's a player. You get him on the bus, like Norm Parker used to say, find the seat later. But Mason Woods is an athlete you want in your class.
Yeah, if he fills out like his dad, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
You know, LeVar. IOC Epineza, Yo Man, as his dad calls him. He's built like AJ. And, you know, now he doesn't have quite the major offers that AJ had or the attention, but he's every bit as dominant at that level. So I think that's still going to be kind of a big push, unless you know something different there. And Nick Brooks, we went and enjoyed his commitment the first time, you know, the day before the Iowa State game, and then decided, I want to take some trips and decommitted. But I know I was still heavily involved in him, and that's probably the smart thing to do, you know, for him to, you know, all right, go take a look and see, and then compare it to Iowa and your family's here and everything. And then, you know, the other one that I put down was Cameron Heron from, you know, Warren Central. We did a trip there a few years ago, watched David Bell and the pouring rain, and Justin Britt was nursing his ACL. But he's another one that I think is, you know, one of the players to watch.
Yeah, there's a lot of work to be done in this class. A lot of good players that Iowa is involved with. I'm a big Joey Van Wetsika fan. Yeah. I think that kid he's in that kind of Tyler Linderbaum.
For sure.
You know, kind of he's got that dude in him. And yeah. I don't know if he ends up at center, defensive tackle. I think he could play either. When I write about him, I just put offensive, defensive line. Yeah. But he was the first guy in this class, and I like him a ton. So I like how this class is coming together so far.
if he's like his old man. I played against him. You know, we played against him a lot, and he was a stud. If he was about 2 inches taller, he might have been a little bit faster. He might have been a D1 guy. But Joey Van Letsky, I think he's a plug and play center. I agree. I think he's Tyler Linderbaum. I think you put him there. He's just got a mean, nasty streak to him, like Linderbaum had. And I'm sure that that's the conversation going on with Kirk's like, this one's mine here, you know, and he has an affinity for centers. And he's told me before, you know, like when I saw Aaron Campman, I thought he'd make a great center. And he probably would have, you know, but, you know, and then we've got Jimmy Sullivan, the quarterback from Fort Wayne. You know, the linebackers, you know, Carson Cooney and Burke Goucher. Is that how you pronounce it?
Went to Illinois for their linebackers.
Yeah. So they're, but as they say, and we say, Iowa and Illinois is natural. Yep. It's, you know, the only thing separating is a state line. I mean, it's way closer to get to the Chicago suburbs than it is Omaha area or Council Bluffs and Sioux City and whatever. And so, like, when they lost Grant Bricks, and I had people in, you know, when we were writing about him, you know, national perspective, and they're like, how can Iowa lose somebody like that in their backyard? I'm like, their backyard, he's closer to Kansas State and certainly Nebraska than he is to Iowa City. It's far. You know, the Chicagoland is much more their home turf than Western Iowa in some ways. So, but I think they've got a good, solid start. We're in March, you know, they've got spring ball coming up. So in less than 2 weeks. So, you know, there's going to be guys rotating in, coming in, visiting, you know, maybe you might pick up a commitment there. Then you got the heavy hitting time, you know, there May and June. And so I would expect them to have in what, probably another 8 to 10, you know, and by mid to late June.
Yep, I think that's fair to say. They usually get into those at least mid to high teens by, you know, the end of that June period when they have the, you know, the official visit day in June, and then they have the tailgater and all that stuff. That's kind of the conclusion of this next period that we're about to get into here. Big time for the 25 class, and they're working on 26s and 27s too, and we'll talk more about them as the recruiting stuff starts to heat up here in the next few months. Want to close here quick and get you out of here, Scott, because you've got another podcast to do. Iowa baseball now sits at 6-6 overall. Had a win. Was that last night? No, Tuesday. They beat St. Thomas over at Banks Field 9-3, and that was coming off losing 2 of 3 at Ole Miss. Iowa has lost two games to Ole Miss. They've lost to Wichita State, Virginia, Auburn, and Lehigh. If you could say quality losses, you know, maybe Lehigh's the one that kind of sticks out a little bit, but those other teams are all baseball schools, so to speak. So, you know, where do we see this Iowa team? The way Rick set up this season is he was going to make sure that this team was tested in the non-conference going into the Big Ten. I'm sure he's hoping he'd win more of these, but, you know, now it's going to put more pressure on them to do well in conference play this year.
It is, for sure. And I think it is a little bit disappointing for them with the arms that they have, the season that they had last year. They wanted to, you know, losing 2 out of 3, that's no sin at Ole Miss. I mean, you're on the road and at an SEC school and in their home environment, and you won one. I think that's okay. I think they would have liked to have won one out of the 3-game series that they went to in Florida. I think it was Florida went against Virginia, Auburn, and Wichita State. Yep. They needed to win one of those. But overall, we also know one thing about Rick, and we'll revisit this in 2 months.
Yep.
Every freaking year, they get a lot better through the course of the year. And by the end of the year, they're going to be the best team, if not the best, one of the top 2 or 3 teams in the Big Ten. And, you know, I don't know that they'll be punished for a lot of these losses. You know, if they could have got a couple more wins, it would have been helpful. But, you know, they're tested. They've taken their lumps. They're going to get better. Rick always has them in position to be very competitive in May. I would expect the same thing this year, but But, you know, they did lose an opportunity. I do think that is also true.
Bill, bullpen's been a little shaky. You need to figure yes. that out. The starting pitching for the most part has been solid, which we expected.
Yeah.
Some shakiness in the bullpen. It's going to help if, you know, Marcus Morgan and Brody Brecht and Cable Obermueller cut down a little bit on their pitch counts and maybe get a little bit deeper into games and then not tax the bullpen as much, but the bullpen still needs to be better when they get to it. So that's really the thing. And like you said, Rick is good at this. He's figuring it out, mixing and matching. He's working through this right now, what he can use, you know, what he's got in his bullpen. And I think they'll figure it out.
You know, wasn't it last year where they had like the best start in season school history and kind of played off of that. And they had a win against LSU. That was a big deal last year. But, you know, you've got to do it this way. And if you want to be considered for an at-large, and I think that's what he's, you know, their goal is, you don't want to place it all, every single ounce of your season on a tournament to win it, you know, to get into it, you know, unlike, you know, like the Valley schools in basketball, yeah. you know, but you want to put yourself in a position to where, hey, you get to the semifinals and you tap out, or the final and you tap out, that you're still good enough to get into the postseason. And I think he's put himself in that position. And I think, you know, by having a really competitive schedule, and it didn't work out exactly the way they wanted it to, but they're still a quality program. They're still picked to be number one in the Big Ten. They have a lot of things to work on. It's still the first week of March. So we'll, you know, pardon me if I don't get knee jerky on this one and just kind of say, I've seen this before. and Rick Heller will have them to be one of the best, if not the best program in the Big Ten in 2 months.
Upcoming schedule this weekend, the Hawkeyes are in Jacksonville, Alabama for Jacksonville State, a 3-game set down there. Then they go Tuesday. Next week is spring break around here. So Tuesday they'll play at Georgia. They'll be in Athens, play a game at Georgia. And then guess who comes to town a week from this weekend? Western Illinois, 3-game set at Banks Field. Scott will be there with his Scott will be there with his gear on. He'll be ready to cheer on the Bulldogs.
Are they the Leathernecks?
Leathernecks. Why is it a Bulldog?
Well, what are they going to have, a Marine? You know, they have, it's Rocky the Bulldog. You know, yeah. So he's the mascot. But yeah, they're. I got my piece of paper from Western Illinois University because it was the least expensive school and I enjoyed my time there. But yes, I guess maybe I should make some room to go see that in between all the other basketball games, right?
3-game set at Banks Field. It'll probably snow. That's
is that true?
Huh?
Is that really going to happen next weekend?
Snow? I don't know. I just, oh, okay. You know how March is out here with the weather. It's so unpredictable. But
yeah.
What is predictable and unpredictable, we're not going to worry about anymore on this podcast because we've come to the end, and we're going to set Scott free here for his next podcast. Again, women's basketball Friday night, men's Friday night and on into the weekend in Minneapolis. Big Ten championships in College Park for wrestling. The men play Sunday, Illinois at home. A lot of stuff going on in Hawkeye land, Hawkeye Nation, if you will. So enjoy it all, folks. And Scott and I will be back next week to talk about it. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you for listening, and have a great weekend. Say goodbye, Scott.
Goodbye, Scott.